I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, December 9th, 2017, you're listening to the Saturday edition of the PW Torch Livecast, a.k.a. The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am Rich Fan. Looking forward to talking with you guys today about Intercontinental Champs who never got a chance at that Winged Eagle. And I'll be bringing on one of my good buddies, Steve Williams, to chat about things should have gotten a ride. And also, we want to chat with you, so make sure you hit one on the touchtone dial if you're ready to talk. And if you haven't decided if you're ready to talk yet, give us a call. Code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Not really one for the telephone. Never fret. You could always go online via our email, and I'll be more than happy to check out any emails you send, any suggestions you give me, or any thoughts you have about the show. And that's at pwtdive@gmail.com. That's pwtdive@gmail.com. So, this is going to be one of those days where we're kind of talking with you. We're talking at you. We're just stuff fun. So we'll go as long as Steve's willing and as long as you guys are able. So let's start it out. Steve, good evening, my man. Welcome to the Deep Dive. How are you doing this evening?
Rich, it is good to be back. Thank you for having me on. It has been a good action-packed weekend here in sunny Crestwood, Kentucky. I'm looking forward into this deep dive of Intercontinental Champions tonight.
Excellent. So, before we get started with the IC champs, why don't you give the folks an idea of what you do typically on the podcast and tip, where they can find you, and how they can keep track of you on social media.
All right. We've been a little bit dormant with our podcast lately, but this coming week we'll be recording the season finale of For Your Consideration over at placetobenation.com. You could follow place number 2BNation on Twitter for updates on how to get involved with our Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project. The next show, which should be dropping within the next week or so, will cover kind of the main event players, the Hogans, Austins, Cenas, etc. If you want to follow me for updates on that, I am at SteveDubRN on Twitter. There is a Facebook page for the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project. Just send a direct message to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Facebook page, and they'll get you set up.
Excellent. So when we were thinking about doing this show and this kind of came up, I'm really excited about the idea of it, mainly because in this day and age, there aren't too many Intercontinental Champions that haven't been world champ. If anything, we can look at Roman Reigns and he's done it in reverse. But if you go back enough, when we were growing up, there were a number of Intercontinental Champions that in hindsight, you say, hey, why didn't that guy get a chance?
Yeah, there were distinct lines. You had your Hogans, your Warriors, those guys at the top. And then it's almost like the Intercontinental title. It's often said that it's the work rate title. I don't necessarily think that's true. But definitely guys that were a peg below as far as being larger-than-life superstars. Your Perfects, your Texas Tornadoes, when I was watching, those were the guys who had that scene on lock. Whereas
yeah,
now, it's kind of a hodgepodge near the top now where guys can kind of move up and down as needed. But back then, it was a real event when there was a new world / WWF champion crowned. And now guys kind of come and go from that scene as they please.
Yeah, I'm looking because I read articles leading up to this, and one of the articles I read mentioned Dolph Ziggler mainly because he won the WWE title and not the World Heavyweight title. We're not necessarily, or at least I wasn't, looking in that regard, because obviously the World Heavyweight title was more of a WCW property than the WWE title. I think at this point, if you say world title, I think we all know what you mean. Do you think that's right?
I absolutely concur with that.
Okay, so why don't we, before we get started, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to bring on our first guest. 862, state your name, where you're calling from, and welcome to the Deep Dive.
It's Kylan Rich. How are you and Steve doing this week?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Glad you can join us. And I know this one was a lot easier of a homework assignment than last week.
Absolutely it was. I was delighted to be able to return to standard level of difficulty for this week's assignment.
So who's your big, or what questions, or who are some people you think come to mind when you think of Intercontinental Champions that really should have gotten a shot at the world title?
Well, and it's funny you ask that, because I think we are going to have similar lists, but the five people that I selected, in no particular order, go as follows. Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, Scott Hall, Goldust, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Ravishing Rick Rude, and finally, Tito Santana.
Okay, now this is going to be a bit of a curveball, which I know we didn't include or when I did the homework assignment, but with your top pick, when would have been, in your opinion, the best time for that person to win the world title?
Believe it or not, my top pick vacillated between Scott Hall and Goldust, but I would have said Scott should have won the world title probably right around WrestleMania 10 time in 94 and done the Bill Goldberg rule, where maybe Vince could have made him a double champion, and he held it, say, until WrestleMania 11 in 1995.
Okay, excellent. And Steve, any questions for Kylan about his list or objections?
No, I found that interesting that Kylan brought up Tito Santana. He was a perennial Intercontinental Champion in the pre-national era, kind of heading right into the national expansion. So I don't know a lot about those runs, except for he was kind of seen as the workhorse of that era. It's interesting to see if he would have gotten an opportunity had, you know, they not been able to get a hold of Hogan at the time, if he would have been a champion in the lineage of the Bob Backlund types of a solid, dependable hand getting a run on the top.
Go ahead, Kylan. I'm so sorry.
Interesting.
Now, for me, Tito always seemed, even at his best, as a guy who was just there. Like, I knew he was an Intercontinental Champion, but for the life of me, I could never see him as anything more than, and part of it was the language they framed him as, Chico Santana. I mean, you had Jesse, who took his sweet time in destroying him every single time he came out. Then Bobby did the same thing. And it wasn't the usual of, okay, this guy, I respect him, I get that these guys are bad guys. For me, I just never ever took Tito Santana seriously. And then when he became El Matador later in his career, it just kind of sealed it for me.
See, Bret Hart, at the time that he was made champion, he said that there was a list on Vince's desk of people who were under consideration for that spot. And according to the legend, Tito was on that list. You figure by that time, October 1992, Tito Santana was already deep into the green glitter pants El Matador era. And there was no damn way. Tito Santana in 1992 was the answer to anybody's problems. See, if he couldn't even bring in the IWCCW title up from Sports Channel America prominence, much less the WWF title.
Yeah, that would have been virtually impossible to do. Now, had he come along in this era, it would be very possible because smaller wrestlers are very much in vogue these days, but No way it was going to happen back then, unfortunately for him.
Yeah, and wow, I mean, thank you for that conversation piece, Kylan, because I never would have thought of Tito. I think, we're more alike than we are different with our lists. And like I said, we're going to go at it a different way. We're going to still do the deep dive, five or six or however many Steve has, but we're also going to try to paint for you guys when and where we think would have been their best time, kind of like what you did. But thanks very much, and I hope you enjoy your weekend.
I sure will, Rich. You may or may not hear from me the next 2 weeks, but I'll let you know.
Okay, sounds good. And if I don't get to talk to you, have a happy holiday, and we'll catch up down the road. And obviously, you can always message me. You know where I'm at, Kylan. That's no problem at all. So that's a great start. When we come back, we're going to start attacking some of our list, not some more of our list, and still hearing from you. Hit us up, area code 515-605-9345. If you're ready to join in the conversation after your call, get one on the tone, and we'll come back in a few moments on the deep dive with Rich and Steve with a little bit more for you guys.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich and Steve. I'm, of course, Rich Fan, here talking with you guys about Intercontinental Champions who never got a chance to win the world title. Before we get started with that again, I bring my co-host Steve on. Definitely take us up on the Amazon.com link. Not only does it help us put a little tip in the tip jar, but it gives you an opportunity to go on Amazon and spend copious amounts of money on family members and get to use that new Amazon 25 and above if you don't have, of course, the fun extras when it comes to Amazon. And if you want to give one of your PW Torch Livecast hosts a gift or a hookup of some sort, you are always welcome to do so. I would say give Bruce Mitchell a little gift-a-roo or something like that. But you know what? Bruce is in his mansion in North Carolina commiserating the loss of the Duke Blue Devils. He might need it. I would say go get him a gift. It's like the Christmas shoes. You'll feel better about it. So,
you know,
Steve,
Bruce
as a Kentucky reverend – oh, go ahead. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say Bruce's local independence company of choice is CWF Mid-Atlantic. Bruce is about as blessed of a wrestling fan as he can get.
Well, you never hear of a bad day for a Duke fan. So, hi, guys, if I can borrow a disaster artist impersonation of one of my favorite crazy directors. So here's the deal, guys. We're talking about Intercontinental champs. We're talking about world champs. We're talking about how they never made the little Venn diagram connection. So for me, Steve, I know Kylan just hit one of them, but I'll start with Rick Rude. that was the guy who I looked at as a kid. I look at now. I saw him in WCW. Having seen him as world champion there, having seen him in a world title match that was awesome, and basically the same match both at the Intercontinental and world title levels with the Ultimate Warrior, I always had a little stick in my craw about him never winning it in that 91-92 era.
Yeah, I think had Rick Rude stuck around in the WWF longer, he would have had a run, because it was right after he left that the scene weakened. And I think he just kind of would have been the de facto last man standing in that run. In WCW 1992, Rick Rude was absolutely the best heel in all of wrestling. But it seemed to be a wrong place, wrong time kind of situation for him in the WWF. He was Warrior's best opponent by far, but Hogan was really the man on top for most of that time. And for whatever reason, Hogan did not seem to have an interest in working Rick Rude. According to Flair, Hogan thought Rude was stiff. I don't know if that's factual or not. I mean, he looks like a big, heavy-handed, stiff guy, so I certainly would believe that. But yeah, I think Rick Rude, WWF 92-93, absolutely would have been a fantastic heel champion running on top with Bret Hart.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues that kind of Rick Rude had against the Hogan is if you look at their body dynamics, Rick was a bigger guy, but as he himself said, and as Steve Austin does a great job of impersonating, he thought this was an upper body business. So if you put him up against Hogan at his biggest, it's one of two things to me would have happened. He would have been dwarfed, or he would have shown fans that you could have a body, beautiful physique, and also be a little bit more agile.
Yeah, Rick Rude, I mean, Hogan was a big man. Rick Rude was a fantastic physique, symmetrical. He was a bodybuilder, where Hogan was just a big, strong superhero type. Yeah, I definitely think that the aesthetics would have put Hogan in a cranky mood, so to speak.
Yeah, he would, can't believe I had I'm not going to embarrass that man on the deep dive. Pasta Mania would have been one and wild, and I'll leave it at that. What about you? Who would you say your first person you wanted to bring to the table was?
My first was kind of an outside the box pick, and it was Rikishi, who was Intercontinental Champion in 2000. For me, Big Kish, he was champion around the time of King of the Ring 2000. The title was coming off a period of just being irrelevant with your godfather types, and China had been champion. Jericho and China had been co-champions not long before that. However, that summer, Rikishi and Val Venus had a textbook mid-card blood feud over that title, which in my eyes helped bump it up quite a bit. A few months later is when it all started to fall apart for the big man. I think the time to put the championship on him would have been probably about the time that Kurt Angle ended up winning, would have been the fall of 2000. He had just turned heel, and his career pretty much went nowhere because first Austin gobbled him up, then Rock gobbled him up, and then Triple H took the heel spot from him. There was just no coming back from that for the foreseeable future. Had they built around him a little bit, maybe give him a 3 or 4 month run going into Mania 17, he could have dropped the title to Rock in No Way Out, just like Kurt Angle did. And then they still could have got to the obvious money match of Angle and Rock going into Mania that year.
Now, do you think Vince would have had an issue because of his body type?
Yes and no. Because there had been, really since the Yokozuna era, there had been fat guys around. Something that doesn't get talked about with Rikishi at that time was that heading into the Austin feud, I remember there being a lot of words about his ankle in particular being all sorts of jacked up and needing fluid to be drained from the ankle. So I don't know if he had mobility issues as a 400-pound man who had been wrestling full-time on a national scene since 88 or 89. Maybe it was just his time was coming to an end regardless.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So now we have Rick Rikishi, two guys in a ride-along I never would have thought I could ever see. I'm going to also go with a modern guy, Kofi Kingston. I think Kofi had that everyone knows the mid to late 2000s era run where he was so on fire, and then one match with Randy Orton, a run interaction with Randy Orton, pretty much damned him to the mid card up until his time with the New Day, which has now kind of revived him. I think people with his time in the New Day forget the fact that despite the ridiculousness, absolute ridiculousness of his gimmick as a fake Jamaican, he was a fantastic worker before the injuries and the pec degradation kicked in. And I think that he would have been the guy in that era if he would have won the WWE title in particular to end this godforsaken argument of there hasn't been a black WWE champion because some jackalopes don't consider The Rock black.
Those people are morons, first off. it's a shame that the Orton feud got derailed as it did. If you remember that Survivor Series, I want to say 2009, maybe 2010, where he pinned CM Punk and Randy Orton pretty much back-to-back to win the match. And it looked like he was on track to big things. Had they been able to keep that momentum going, by the following SummerSlam, he absolutely could have got the rocket strapped to him and had himself a nice run. He's athletic. He's articulate. Kids love him. You know, there's no reason, you know, besides now what you get with the stagnation of guys just being around forever, you know, there's no reason he couldn't have got his shot at some point.
Yeah, and he didn't have a chance either to – he was smart enough to realize doing a Christian-esque hop to TNA and kind of get his wins there and come back would work, especially because in that primarily Southern company and with guys at the time like the Harris brothers – asserting their power, I don't think that would have been the smartest play.
No, absolutely not. And he's somebody who you forget has been around for so long now. He was on the card at SummerSlam 2008. I mean, here we are 9 years later, and this guy is still having a pretty good run. So good on him.
Yeah, I mean, he's 36 years old. He started with the WWE in 2006 in Deep South. So 2006, I sound like my grandfather. So he's been with them for 12 years. That's a good run without any interruptions. He didn't have any of those future endeavors where he just bumped to the side.
No, and relatively injury-free. He broke his ankle this past year, but that was the first significant stretch of time he's missed in that entire run.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think of. He's been in the New Day for almost 3 years. I want to say they started in July 21st, 2014.
All right, it's kind of a short sidebar. Mm-hmm. Which of if any of those three gentlemen in the New Day were to break out, who would be your pick to be the one to get the rocket strap to him now in the year of our Lord 2017?
Oh, see, this is tough. This is because I would have said Big E, but now I feel like maybe it should go to Xavier.
I agree. I mean, Big E is the one that gets a lot of the hype. I think they are sitting on a gold mine that they don't even realize they have with Austin Creed. He is the guy you can send on the talk shows, and he will represent himself and the company extremely well. I mean, he's young, handsome, good-looking kid. He's got charisma, and he can work. People are realizing how good of a wrestler he is this year. And I think the sky's the limit for him if they realize what they have.
Listen, I was in love with him when he had the Lethal Consequences team. That was one of the rare times I really got into Jay Lethal. Lethal Consequences, Jay Lethal, and when he was in Special K, because that was the first time I saw him here in Pittsburgh in Ring of Honor.
Hey, man, Jay Lethal's another guy who's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine, just put that in perspective. You said that Kofi had been with that company for 12 years. Just take a random name. Greg Valentine was on WrestleMania 1. Think of how out of place Greg Valentine would have been at WrestleMania 13. So it says something for these guys with this kind of staying power. It's amazing to me now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Valentine real quick on Wikipedia while we talk about this. He was in WWE for an 8-year stint from 84 to 92, mm-hmm. and that's it. 81 to 82, he left. 84 to 92. And then it was kind of like, yeah, man, and you're going to the indie scene and you show up every couple of years as a legend.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan. Think of the money Hulk Hogan made for that company. Was there for 9.5 years consecutively on his biggest run.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we talk about Cena, I mean, as much as we even make fun of a Alicia Fox, you have these people who have been basically institutions, and that it's just a matter of, can you see them outside of what you saw them as maybe when they first got there?
That is, breaking the perception is the key. Absolutely.
Now, I think enough of us, Gavin. Let's add in a caller, 814. State your name, where you're calling from, and welcome to the deep dive.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, how are you, Brian?
Yeah. First question for you is, what's your favorite house show Intercontinental Championship match? Mine was Virgil against Shawn Michaels.
Ooh. I would say Triple H versus Mankind, or gosh, who was it? Might have been Ahmed Johnson. And it's my favorite because someone yelled from the crowd that Triple H thinks he invented the drop kick, and he stopped mid headlock, turned to the guy and said, "I don't, but I know you invented the small package." And God bless him, no matter how much I dislike his political moves, that was well played.
Well, I think mine was, I've only seen one Intercontinental Championship house match, so it wins by default. It was summer of 1998 with Triple H and The Rock. Went for roughly 30 minutes at the Louisville Gardens the week after Triple H lost the European title to D'Lo Brown. It was the most heated match on the show, so it absolutely is worthy of that position.
And Ron, what about you? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is there any reason why Don Morocco never got a shot at the world title? I know Backlund held that title for a long time. Was it because of Morocco's possible drinking issues?
You know what? That's what I read. I don't want to say heard because I wasn't around then, and I don't want to sound presumptuous than I already do, having a wrestling podcast here on the PW Torch. But yeah, that's what I read when I was looking at different books or listening to shoot tapes and things like that, that his drinking may have been a precipitating factor in not being able to trust him to make dates, whereas Bruno was a guy you knew he had to be there. He was going to be there maybe 5-10 minutes early.
Yeah, it was actually during the Bob Backlund period he would have been
Well, in the case of Backlund, that would have been even more so, because with Backlund, you had a guy who would have been at the arena an hour early doing stairs versus a guy who you might not be sure is going to be on the up-and-up by the time they get to the ring. And I know as much since once he was trying to make those moves to take over was where he was at. Like, I give Vince McMahon credit for a lot of things when it came to safe, because he's done most successful things playing safe, but in terms of messing around with Morocco, he was body beautiful, but he had other guys that could do the same thing and be less of a headache.
And was the reason why Piper didn't get a shot at the title was because Vince was afraid maybe he'd hold up the world title and not want to lose it to anybody?
That one I don't know for sure. Steve, had you heard anything about that one?
That wouldn't surprise me, just because even as the challenger, they had such a hard time for Piper to let Hogan get over on him. You know, if you look at all the challengers of that period, Hogan would run through them and finish up, and that was that. Piper was so protective of his spot. Yeah, I don't think Hogan ever actually got a pinfall on him until they were in WCW. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me at all that was part of the mindset of not – I would have loved to have seen Piper – having a small run going into 1986 into WrestleMania 2, but if he doesn't want to job the title, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, and Ryan, for taking my call.
No problem. Have a wonderful week, and hopefully get to hear from you soon again. All right. So this is, I always like when Ryan calls, because it's like a Torch Observer crossover. I can just finish listening to Wrestling Observer Live and hear him talking with Semper Vivi. Then, you know, I think in 3 weeks, Semper Vivi will be back here talking about Wrestle Kingdom, and hopefully we get some more crossover then. I'm going to go to a quick break, Steve. When we come back, we'll hit up some more of our list. We'll hit some more callers, and obviously, we're looking to hear from you guys here on The Deep Dive.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, welcome back to The Deep Dive with Rich Fan and Steve Williams. I'm Rich. Steve will be along shortly. Listen to editor-publisher Wade Keller. The new live cast show is in addition to my own are fun. We always welcome commentary, criticism, queries, anything you want to make the conversation fun. So, Steve, when last we chatted, you had been able to give Rikishi, but I don't think you had a chance to give any more. So why don't you go down your list a little bit and lay some 411 on the folks.
All right, we are now approximately 30 minutes into the show, and I think we would be remiss if we did not mention the bad guy, Razor Ramon, at this point.
Absolutely.
Razor was a guy who was right at that second tier and right at the top of that second tier for pretty much his entire run. First won the Intercontinental title at the end of 93 and then was out of the company in 96. That period of time does encompass what was the worst drawing WWF title run of all time, that being Diesel from November 94 to November 95. There is a tidbit, speaking of the Amazon link you mentioned earlier, use that link to purchase Titan Sinking, The Decline of the WWF in 1995, a $5 book written by James Dixon. In that book, there is a short mention of a heel turn that was planned for Razor Ramon going into WrestleMania 11. The plan at the time apparently was for Razor to wrestle The Undertaker at that show as a heel. They had done vignettes at a graveyard and everything else for that. That would have been intriguing. But once it became obvious that Diesel wasn't making money as champion, why not just go ahead and turn Razor, let him have a run in the summer, fall of 1995. And, you know, why the hell not? If Diesel wasn't working, why not try Razor? And Razor tagging off to Shawn Michaels certainly would not have been an issue. The Clique would have been more than happy to put each other over.
Yeah, and that's the one thing I always wondered about. Since they were all so cool with each other, it wouldn't have been a political landmine to do so. So why not? Heck, I mean, even when Hall was exhibiting the issues he had later in his career, I could understand it, but in the 90s, the mid-90s in particular, why not go for it? He was a good-looking guy. He was everything Vince would do more. I would argue that during that era, if they had stayed, that probably would have been the best time for him to do it.
I mean, he was tall, charismatic, muscular, you know. He made such a lasting impression that our good friend Cameron Hawkins is maybe still has a Tiger Beat style Razor Ramon poster in his bedroom right now. This man was a star.
I would think his fiance probably would get rid of it, but knowing Cam, he probably has a couple of them behind closed and stuff he can just roll down when she leaves.
I'm talking cutouts in the flap of the Trapper Keeper, all of that stuff. But yeah, I definitely, if that run had happened in modern day WWE, Razor Ramon would have had multiple world title reigns under his belt by now.
Oh, I agree with you completely. I mean, he would have been a guy where people would have been sick at how much I feel like he could have gotten the Roman Reigns treatment of why are they shoving Scott Hall down. But I think because of his experience in the territories, he was so good at pulling people in. And one of the things, to Ryan's point, when it came to Morocco, I think one of the things that held Hall back regardless of when he would have gotten the title shot is his penchant for being Eeyore in the back and how that could have been ill-received.
Yeah, and back then, he was seen as, just reading the Observer and Torchback issues, it looked like he was the one that at the time was the obvious manipulator in the clique. Dean Douglas in particular tells the stories of Scott Hall intentionally going limp on backdrops and things of that nature. So yeah, maybe, you know, some of the stuff that came to light a couple years later were already known within the business back then. Maybe there's a good reason here. A fan, I'm debunking the scenario of 20 years ago, and Razor Ramon is the damn champion in 1995.
Oh, yeah, and he was on my list as well, so that was a good one. One guy I had on that would have been in the Wayback Machine is Ricky Steamboat, I think, especially given what we saw. While it wasn't the most money-drawing era in NWA history or Jim Crockett Promotions history, I think having a guy like Steamboat at the top of your card to wrestle and slay the, no pun intended, dragons that were around in WWE at the time, I would say for him, it would have been the perfect time before he left in the mid-80s, because I think if it was post Jim Crockett Promotions, it would have been filed under Vince not wanting to see one of their guys win his belt.
Yeah, Steamboat disappeared after '88. And when you mention Steamboat, you know, who would keep up with him? Say, Larry caught up with him in WWE. However, you had that. You had DiBiase. Bret Hart wasn't quite ready yet. The way it worked then, he could have got a good 6 months out of Savage and DiBiase alone while everybody else was guy in line. Yeah, he's an interesting one. Maybe part of the reason why he didn't get wins, especially during 2 months around 88 and 91, was he was the one to crap with business. And then also, he was married to a sort of crazy woman who just told him from things with no... he didn't have those personal issues going on with Bonnie Steamboat, Bonnie the Dragon Steamboat. Then maybe we could have got some more good Rick Steamboat. Who knows?
Well, Steve, if you could... mute real quick. You were breaking up toward the end. If you could try to reconnect, because it was like it was more the internet and less of like you being away from like your computer. So if you could try that, I'm going to bring on Mr. 623, as he's known in the streets, the VIP 25 man experience. When you see him, that's awkward. So welcome, Brian. Welcome to the deep dive. What can we help you with today?
Hey, Rich, and I know Steve is about to call back in. Hopefully, you're both having a real good day. I'll make this quick since I'm on public transit. First of all, I love this conversation. Intercontinental title is really close to my heart. So sticking with the conversation, so I have a couple different reverse things. So you haven't mentioned Pedro Morales yet. Pedro, he did the reverse, actually. You know, he was a WWF champion in the 70s, had that two-year run. Dropped the title to Stan Stasiak, and then he turned back around and was, I believe, a third Intercontinental champion. And he had a actually had two runs wrapped around with Morocco, where he won it from Tim Patera, lost Morocco, won it from Morocco, and then Morocco left for Tito. So we have a reverse world title to Intercontinental title, but that was the first one. Then, as far as Ryan from Cumberland, he mentioned favorite match. My favorite Intercontinental match was my favorite wrestler was Randy Savage. And right after he won the title, he still had some WWF championship matches against Hogan. So there was some double or Savage was going for the world title when he also had an Intercontinental title. And there was a match in Detroit where Savage challenged Hogan. And this is back in the day, Rich, believe it or not. Well, not believe it or not, but the match would have been at Joe Louis Arena in downtown Detroit, now been retired. But since the match had sold so well that they actually had an overflow and they had like a simulcast right next door at the Cobo Arena, which is a smaller, another arena that was right next door to Joe Louis in downtown Detroit. So that's how hot the WWF was back. And this, I'm sorry, I should have said the date too, by the way. The date would have been in March of 1986 when that match went down. So that was one of my favorite matches where, luckily, my dad, my brother, and I got tickets early, so we're actually in Joe Louis. But they sold so many tickets, they sold out of Joe Louis, so they had the overflow with a closed circuit screen in a Cobo Arena. And then probably, again, I don't have a list, so I won't keep this quick, but and you just mentioned it was about Roddy Piper, was probably the person who had a very short Intercontinental title run. Remember, he won it from the Mountie, who got it from Mountie beat Bret Hart. It was pretty, and Mountie had a pretty short run, which would have been Jacques Rougeau, the Mountie. And then Piper dropped it to Bret Hart, I believe at WrestleMania 7, if I'm not sure, or 7 or 8, I'm not sure which one it was. Actually, probably was 7. Anyway, so that would be my person who, you know, was Roddy, was he a good world champion material? Yes and no, we can probably argue that, you know, he's better as a heel. But actually, he won that match at the face, ironically. Better as never winning a world title because he didn't necessarily need it. But he did have that one singles run from January till WrestleMania, was probably in March at that time, or maybe April.
Awesome. Steve, you back with us?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. So Brian actually went in reverse. He hit us first with Pedro Morales and the idea of Pedro's ability to be a champion that then became Intercontinental Champion. And then you heard the aforementioned Piper Love. What did you think of Kofi, though, Brian?
Okay, so what I thought about – I mean, Kofi's a really good study because, I mean, multiple U.S. and Intercontinental titles goes. I think there was a point, and I brought this up on one of the Porch audios where – I think it was actually on it was a VIP exclusive on The Fix where Kofi did have that moment, and I'm sorry I don't remember the year right now, against Randy Orton where he had a destroying Orton's car, the one in Madison Square Garden when he put Orton through the table. He went to, and that was later that month, Survivor Series, where he pinned CM Punk and Randy Orton in succession to win Survivor Series for his team. So he had that moment there, and I'm sorry I don't remember the year. But then it just kind of went away. Who knows, was it like attitude? Was it, hey, he smiled too much? Something that Vince didn't like. But I thought he would have been a pretty good world champion around that time. And that, by the time, also that was the time when that was going down, when Sheamus was going through his first WWE championship run at that time.
Yeah, Sheamus' run was a weird one because his first title was blatantly accidental. John Cena's oh-poop look. As he stands on the, as he's been gently bumped through with his leg, it was just so weird.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I appreciate him. I think, you know, obviously, safe travels on the public transpo, and as always, a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've ever met Steve before. Steve, your name doesn't sound very familiar to me, but Steve, it's nice to meet you.
Oh, same to you, sir.
Oh, see, before I get you out of here, Brian, you got to realize Steve is an OG from the East Coast cast. He doesn't call in often, but he is, if you look at the East Coast cast T-shirt, Steve is the crazy promoter Steve Austin lookalike that has his hands over everything he surveys, if you remember that shirt.
I'm just teasing Steve. Him and I are Twitter friends, and you know we talked actually on the deep dive before too. So, and I'm just messing with Steve.
Of course.
Oh. All right. Well, Brian, keeping it real. The longest reigning defending VIP caller until someone proves otherwise. Just like with Wade and Bruce with the longest running episodic podcast in history of man with the Bruce Mitchell audio show, which you can get by being a VIP member of the PW Torch, mind you. That was fun. So in terms of people I haven't mentioned yet, I have a curveball, and I'm going to throw them your way after we do the last pause for the cause. Steve Austin's going to track me down for gimmick infringement, but I love that phrase. And so when we come back on the deep dive, we're going to finish it up, answer any questions you guys have remaining, and hopefully not get sued by Stone Cold.
No matter what kind of wrestling fan you are, Ring Rust Radio is the perfect podcast for you. Every Wednesday night, Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest news in professional wrestling, including Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-view reviews. That isn't all, as Ring Rust Radio also delves into NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan to discuss the latest happenings in every major company. Ring Rust Radio conducts interviews with the biggest stars in the wrestling business as well, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, and many more. If you're looking for your wrestling fix with an entertaining twist, check out Ring Rust Radio every week on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the home stretch of the deep dive with Rich and Steve. We're talking Intercontinental Champions that never made it to the big gold. I, before the last break, mentioned that there was someone who was a bit of a curveball, and it's because technically they were a tag team, and I would have been happy with either one of them winning the title, and that would be Owen and the British Bulldog. I think either one of them, Owen post Brett Screwjob, Bulldog pre back injury, would have been good candidates for the world title, but because circumstances outside of their own control and really the machinations of the Click version 2.5, that would never have happened.
Rich, you rascal. I was going to mention Owen Hart next. I agree that he would have been a great champion post Survivor Series WrestleMania 14. I also would have liked to have seen him get a run maybe in the fall of 94 during the initial Brett feud. I think a short title run there would have done worlds for him and bumping him up to a major status. Bulldog, on the other hand, I mean, I liked Bulldog, but the man once spent a summer allegedly smoking crack with Jim Neidhart. You know, I can't get behind Bulldog just because he's a flake. He got himself fired from WWF in the fall of 92, and then that late 90s run, mid to late 90s, was probably his most consistent run, and by then he was overshadowed by the Austins and the Shawn Michaels and even the Undertakers of the time. So I'm going to give that a yay on Owen, but a negative on the Bulldog.
Here's for me, what's the deal with the British Bulldog? Okay, crack. I mean, who hasn't had it sprinkled on them when accosted by local law enforcement? Blake, yes, British Bulldog perpetually looked like he was that guy who went to spring break in Jamaica and lived it a little too hard, both via his actions out of the ring and the braided hair he decided to adorn within it. But for the love of God, every time, and this has nothing to do with the real British Bulldog, it has to do with impersonation by Will Sasso. Every time Will Sasso impersonates Bulldog and Dynamite asking Bobby Heenan for Matilda back, I cry laughing.
Bobby Heenan, we have the dog. Get back Matilda.
You know, it's just, oh. If any of you guys get a chance, they're in the Diamonding, which is the pare down from their most listeners to like one magical listener. If you look up the 10-minute podcast and look at any of their wrestling stuff, I've mentioned it my first few times doing the deep dive. If I ever sound like Pete Sachalowski's Wrestle Place, we know I've gone horribly wrong and Wade's just going to have to shut this down. But you would love it. It's 10 minutes out of your time. Three comedians who love pro wrestling and happen to be really good at their jobs will intersperse the NWO theme song to cut each other off, pretend to be Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. That's my favorite. I wish I was good enough to impersonate Kevin Nash to just have my – like if any of us are in conversation, be like, hey, yo, me and Kevin were in the back and we don't care. Because if I did that to Shahid once, I think my life would be made.
You know, it's fake, bro. It's just – it's fake. Nothing's real with the money and the miles, bro.
That's it. Oh, man. Vinnie Rue. If we get some Vinnie Rue in this mug, I don't know how Wade can exist on Podcast One with Vincent Russo, but such is life. But, yeah, before we close up shop, Steve, we've gone through all of my list. Is there anyone else you have left?
Ken Shamrock is the only other one I really wanted to touch base that hasn't been mentioned yet. Ken Shamrock, I've mentioned this on the air before. The weeks leading up to Survivor Series 97, they were building him up to be an absolute beast. He made Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart tap on consecutive weeks, and in my 15-year-old mind, I thought for sure I was looking at a future world champion. I think the inability to knock off The Rock multiple matches in the spring and summer of 98 is what led to him not really getting over that hump like they would have liked. I don't know why he didn't at least get a one main event match with Austin. after SummerSlam, it seemed like that's all that was left was Shamrock, and instead he wrestled Undertaker and Kane at the same time after beating both of them in individual matches. I think a Fall 98 run would have done Ken Shamrock some good.
Yeah, I think Ken's biggest issue was, I think, much like Bret Hart, people saw him as taking himself too seriously. And that is, ironically, in a business where you have to protect yourself for all times, politically, is a bad thing. I don't get that.
Oh, Ken Shamrock in 1985, you know, would have been an ideal NWA champion, because he's a guy who, you know, the old school shooter aspect, you need somebody who's going to not get double crossed. Ken Shamrock's your guy. In sports entertainment, Russo-esque 1998-99, you know, maybe you don't want to put the title on a man who could kill anyone on your roster. You know, that could have gone terribly awry now that I think about it. But yeah, maybe he didn't have the charisma of some of the other guys. Obviously, he was around in a golden era with Rock and Austin both existing on one show at the same time. But I think he would have been a fun short-term champion.
Yeah, I really liked the Lion's Den match. It was like wrestling in your brother's basement. And the one thing I think that held him back, again, going back to the political machinations, when DX started doing the impersonations and they grabbed his and said, you know, all this talk about sphincters makes me want to do the five-knuckle shuffle. And JR's like, well, I don't know about that. And, you know, it's just, it was, or my, which my buddy Chris, who's been a frequent co-host on the Deep Dive, always mentions the match Ken Shamrock had where Triple H was on commentary and they were talking about how his opponent was bilingual, to which Triple H said, again, I'm bi a lot of things. Lingual ain't one of them, to which JR instantly responded with no pause, arm drag by Shamrock.
And then Hunter stops and says, wait, did I mean to say that? I don't think you did in any event.
Yeah, it was, oh my God. And that was one of those things where it's like an 80s comedy. Triple H is trying to own Shamrock and cell phones. And a cell phone in that day and age was nowhere nearly as bad as it could have been for him on the 80s.
You know, had Shamrock stuck around one more year, he would have been able to work with Kurt Angle. He would have been able to work with Eddie Guerrero. He would have been able to work with that fella from Georgia that we don't talk about anymore. He would have had a solid crew to work with, and maybe he would have got his 6 weeks with the title. I mean, who knows? I hate these 2000, once the Radicals come in, what if guys. It makes me want to bang my head on the wall. The number of guys that just missed these great matches because they happened to leave right before the work rate showed up to WWF.
Yeah, I mean, and to that point, if you look at, you know, Redacted and the other members of the Radicals, you have a group of people where, you know, Perry Saturn won the European Championship and the Hardcore Championship. But, you know, there is a universe in which Perry Saturn could have been a decent Intercontinental champion. Dean Malenko, if someone had ever given him a chance to be his generation's Daniel Bryan, maybe could have been more than the sex crazed joke they turned him out to be later in his career with Lita. And China, too.
You know, I had a foundation laid. We were going to start doing a show tracing the Radicals from their arrival on Nitro through the unfortunate June 2007 murders. Just following these guys and how they changed the business, how the business changed them. It would have been a fun long-term project. However, once we got down to brass tacks, I couldn't find anyone who was willing to tackle a long-term Chris Benoit project. So that never got off the ground, and I don't blame him. It was hard finding a balance to celebrate the thing these other guys did without glorifying Chris Benoit. Yeah, so if anybody out there listening wants to steal that idea, feel free.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, Steve, to be honest, if we had to, that's something I would love to do next year, maybe in the summer when my school responsibilities are a little slower, because I think I could hold my nose and do the Benoit part at this point. After 10 years, I've finally gotten that callus where I'm not going to watch a match voluntarily in a sense of, oh, hey, let me see this, like the triple threat match for the Eurocontinental title, was one of my favorite matches mm-hmm. of his, but I've never seen it since the murders.
Yeah, the big block was we were all set to record the first show, and then Nancy Toffoloni appeared on Jericho's show.
Oh.
And we're like, oh no, we can't do this now. There's no way this is going to look good.
Yeah. I think one thing, and this might be one of those Alvarez-esque books that could be written, and if someone steals it, I can't really argue because I should just get off my butt and do it. But if you look from the lens of just take not just the Radicals, the idea of the Kevin Nash vanilla midget line and how that mindset has changed in the past 15 years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Daniel Bryan would not have existed in 1995 without these other guys breaking that proverbial glass ceiling.
Yeah, like the idea, like a Jericho, the I don't give an F Chris Jericho run in WCW where you're creating things like Ralphus and you're just so obnoxious with your hair every week because you know no one cares what you're doing back there. It's to now where you have a person like Styles who by all rights should be in 205 Live but has emerged past that and to his, you know, obvious, you know, benefit and to the benefit of wrestling fans worldwide. And I look at a guy like, you know, Bruce Mitchell's own Cedric Alexander, who I wish someone would just kidnap and put on SmackDown and pretend like he was never on 205 Live.
You know, to tie that back into the theme of this show, it really says a lot about modern day WWE that AJ Styles is not eligible for our list. He is exactly the kind of guy who would have been stuck at that second tier level 20, 25 years ago, and now he is a multiple time WWE champion. Carrying a brand on his shoulders, just had a fantastic match with Brock Lesnar. And we've come a long way. There's still, creative has a lot to work on, but athletically speaking, you know, the business is maybe in the place it's ever been as far as the actual between the ropes action.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great place to close, because if you look at a person like, as much as people have their issues, or some people have their issues with Roman Reigns, a Roman Reigns world champion, a Roman Reigns intercontinental champion is far more athletic than most of the world champions from 1985 until 1994.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
Seth Rollins. If you saw a Seth Rollins in 1995, your head would have exploded.
Seth Rollins would have been my favorite character in Mortal Kombat. Like, he is not someone who I would have thought could exist as a person in that time frame.
Yeah, it's like, what do you mean this guy can not only wrestle but do a what is that? Why is he still spinning in the air? Why has he not come down? Like, he would just – yeah, people would just be like if you ever saw a semi-pro – when they first did the alley-oop in the ABA and the ref's like, no, foul. No, two fouls. And he's like, I don't know why, but that shouldn't be legal. And that's what you would do if you had seen a Seth Rollins in 1995.
I would have also perhaps sang Love Me Sexy after seeing that beautiful Phoenix Splash.
Well played, sir. Now, before we get out of here, Steve, why don't you lay down any appearances you guys are going to be making with regard to, for your consideration, any other podcasts you're going to be on, and let them know again where you can be found on Twitter.
I am at SteveDubRN on Twitter. Feel free to follow. I'm all about nonsense, frankly. I've been watching a lot of EWA lately and tweeting about the ridiculousness I found in Minneapolis. Place to Be Nation Wrestling, a podcast feed available on all your major podcatcher apps. There are also two other feeds that we're involved with, Pro Wrestling Only feed, as well as Place to Nation Pop feed for non-professional wrestling pop culture type podcast. I will be recording the For Your Consideration finale this week. I also refer you to Stephen Graham's Royal Ramble podcast on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, in which I recently made an appearance. And I believe that is all I have to plug.
Excellent. Well, Steve, always welcome. Enjoy the rest of your December, and I look forward to having you back on in the new year. Guys, it's been real. Next week, usually I don't do this, but next week, in addition to having an awesome host like Steve, next week it's going to get a little little bit of a deja vu all over again, because you hear him on Wednesday and I yell at him. Now I get to bring him onto my show on Saturday. Travis Bryant of the East Coast Cast will be my guest host, and we're going to be talking about NXT roster from top to bottom, wrestlers that should go up to the main roster, as well as wrestlers on the main roster that might do with a little bit of time back down there to get some simmering and some cooking. As always, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys. Dive into something new. Challenge yourself. Impress yourself with how far you can go and for how much further you can go beyond what you thought you could. It's been real. I'll see you next week. And remember to keep diving.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
This is Love.